sea to shining sea, from the shores to the shores beyond, in this one beautiful Eden we call home. Welcome aboard. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Froy, and joining us today is going to be Jack Mullen, a good-hearted, loyal American who's going to talk to us about some of the issues that are very, very pertinent in today's day and age, where the subversion of we, the people, is in a pot on the stove with the dial turned up hot. And we have a defense. It's Power Our Nation. We have critical thinking skills that most of us here anyway have acquired. We're not interested in the echo chamber effect of big media trying to control our minds and subvert our freedom. So as I've said before, you hear that sound? You hear that sound, son? That's freedom. I love to wake up to the sound of freedom in the morning. It sounds like victory, and there's no greater victory than cavalry, and no greater cavalry than the Power Hour cavalry. We're forming posse, and we're taking on those forces of darkness today. And there's one thing that the Bible's very clear of about these forces of darkness, and I don't hear it very often, even though this is probably one of the most basic, fundamental issues, points, ideologies in dealing in this struggle that you can have, is we fight not against flesh and blood. And virtually everyone that talks about the battle and the struggle most likely talks about the flesh and the blood as opposed to the evil spirits that we're fighting against. And I believe this war started in the Garden of Eden times, and the sides were the Tree of Life and the Tree of Knowledge. And I believe the Tree of Knowledge is manifesting itself at a very great rate. It's the artificial intelligence, the silicon-based life of an Antichrist system. And it's taking over everything, down to the smallest little detail. It is and will be the big brother of domination over all kindred spirits and tongues. Because we can't comprehend that there's something that's not flesh and blood fighting against us. So if we don't even know who or what the enemy is, how can we wage a battle against it? We just react to all the circumstances that are created by this machine, and this machine uses the flesh and the blood as its proxy army to do its bidding, covertly and overtly, around this earth. And that's something we have to take into great heed as well, or we will lose this struggle because the enemies against us are so great. You know, I miss Joyce Riley very, very much. We had a good few years knocking them hard, really hard, and I miss those days. Just seems like almost like my fingers don't have anything to do if I wasn't writing Joyce in the morning to give her tips on some of the big scandals, news items, or things that were coming along, and turning the Power Hour into the point of the sword to give the best, most credible analysis possible. And she was always open and receptive to that. And we did so much good work. Some of it went down the memory hole, which is a shame. I think a couple of issues were lost. One was the Polish plane crash, which I think was a phenomenal piece of work we did together. And then the other one was the death of SEAL Team 6, which was just an entrapment into murder, really. But she had a saying, it's all by design. And in my multitude of books that are surrounding me, one came down and got to the top of the pile a little faster, even though it's an older book. It's called What Happened by Scott McClellan, and it was written some time ago. I think it was in the New York Times bestseller list back in 2008. But the age doesn't change the quality of the wine. Frequently it makes it better, because that way we can savor what's in it more, because we'll have, as in this case, 11 years of hindsight to look back on what was said. And even more. But in this book, he mentions another book, The Permanent Campaign and Its Future, by Norman J. Ornstein of American Enterprise Institute and Thomas E. Mann of the Brookings Institution. The permanent campaign is been manifesting itself for the last few decades. You can, in this book, it goes back to Nixon to talk about that, but it's probably been forever in party politics, where every dirty trick known to mankind is played, pulled, and schemed against we the people. And we react to it very, very much. I'll read you one small chapter in this. In this new system, governing is primarily focused in Hell-Close phrase on manipulating sources of public approval using such tools as the news, media, political blogs, popular websites, paid advertising, talk radio, local organizations, and propaganda disseminated by interest groups to shape narratives to one's advantage. In the age of the permanent campaign, governing becomes an offshoot of campaigning rather than the other way around. Bills at times, and I would adjust that to go bills, are written as much to create talking points for boosting one's own party and embarrassing the opposition as they are to improve operations of government or to promote justice. Presidential initiatives, from health care reforms to foreign invasions, are regularly devised, named, timed, and launched with one eye or both eyes on the electoral calendar. Budgets are drawn up not solely with pressing needs of the public at the forefront, but rather to reward political loyalists, punish enemies, and win votes in contested districts and states when November rolls around. And in the news today, there's a little piece in there, actually a large piece, about all the government waste, financing all kinds of like trivial, mundane, useless pieces of garbage, like, you know, I think it was mating calls of frogs in Central America or something like that was one of them. And basically, this is the rewarding of your political loyalists. So instead of just bribing them outright, you create some sort of budgetary thing to look into some project or scheme and pay these people off so that they can be rewarded with your hard-earned money. The founding fathers were very much against political parties. They looked at it primarily as something evil. George Washington, in his farewell address, advised that in 1796, and of fatal tendency to put in place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority, by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men and women will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them to unjust dominion. I have already intimated to you the danger of parties in the state. Let me now warn you in the most solemn manner against the baneful effects of the spirit of the party generally. This spirit, unfortunately, is inseparable from our nature, having its roots in the strongest passions of the human mind. And you see, he knows what he's talking about because he called about the spirit. So he knows we're not talking about flesh and blood. Domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, has perpetrated the most horrid enormities, is itself a frightful despotism. Now, I would prefer that the public school system read that in the morning frequently so that students and young people are aware of this, because they jump on to this party bandwagon like they're getting on a bus to go to Disneyland, one Satan paradise over another, and they let this echo chamber effect lead them astray, take them down any road that has been preordained and focused in advance to use all these tools that I mentioned before from the book to manipulate you into a rage, seeking some sort of revenge, that they pick a target for a revenge. And one of the most popular targets today, of course, is gun owners, constitutionalists, Christians, the NRA. That was on the BBC this morning, where, you know, you got to adjust your glasses to make sure you're seeing the right thing, to say that it's a terrorist organization. Well, you know what? The Founding Fathers were a terrorist organization. George Washington was the head of a terrorist organization because he was leading the army to rebel against George III and remove us from this oblivious control of a mad king, who is basically a good guy compared to what's being done to us today. So we can see now that all these people that are devising these terror laws are basically not patriots. Governments are just infested with basically what would be traitors to the Republic. And they are controlling this diaspora of crap to take us off the cliff and destroy the Republic. Countries are founded by the patriots, not by an inertia that just sits around where a benevolent king drops it like fruit from a tree. And that's something we have to be very, very aware of. It's through basically revolution and rebellion that we get most of the modern nation states. Parliament didn't really happen in England until King Charles's head went in the basket. And then a rule somewhat of the people commenced. John Kennedy said, there are risks and costs to action, but they are far less than the long-range risks of comfortable inaction. And I find basically the whole world is stuck into the comfortable inaction, because before the cataclysm, everything's fine. After the cataclysm, everybody knows. But frequently it's too late to come to action. And that's very, very important. Very, very important. One of the big stories I would have led with Joyce, had she still been alive, would have been, you know, one that we just have to break barriers down, because I look for those non-flesh and blood things in stories that no one else does really go for. And the big one for me, of course, is Jeffrey Epstein. And when you analyze things and look at things without the prejudices implanted in your mind from other sources at the outset to lead you down a false trail, that's what the enemy's supposed to do. It is the art of war. Even if you have it right at your fingertips, it's before your eyes, it's playing in your ears, the enemy has to take you down another trail and prevent you from seeing that. We're our most difficult enemies, and that is, Jesus said, I give them eyes and they will not see, I give them ears and they will not hear. So even if I tell you this, you can't hear it and you can't see it, because your mind is closed to the truth. And you don't use those eyes to see and discern. We did this at Power Hour, going way, 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 way back to a certain shooting of a certain congresswoman, and looking at suspects that are paraded before us, and realizing that one body doesn't look like the other body, that there are clear class differences between them. And one of them is the body they reeled into the hospital that they said was Epstein. And the photographic evidence I can find of him on the internet, there is one major, 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 major malfunction. There are general class characteristics that you could pawn him off and say, one is the other. But there's one very defined, very different, very unusual anomaly that even though I just could use one, I can state categorically that that body that's paraded before the news media isn't him. And usually for the sake of dignity, when they're taking a body into the hospital, it's not done in front of the cameras. They cover it with a white sheet to protect the dignity of the body. This one was openly presented because it's part of a psychological operation to lead you down the false trail. But in his left earlobe, which is quite visible, and I looked at pictures of him when he was a young man and more recent pictures, there's finger-like bit of skin that comes down from the top of the earlobe. That's very, very unusual. It's not something I can even recall seeing on anyone else's ear, but it's there. But it's not on the pictures of Epstein at any time in his life that I can find. And his nose is different too, but that's a minor issue. But I can categorically state, that ain't him, baby. And the best death you can have as some kind of despot or high-end criminal is the one that just takes you out and puts you into a new life with a new name and a new identity somewhere else. And once you're declared officially dead, well, even if we got the evidence that happened with a lot of the German war criminals, they were hunted down. We got Bormann. And the German police would say, we got a death certificate. But we got Bormann. But we got a death certificate. Get out of my office. And that's the end of it. 2 days before he died, allegedly, he started a trust. And with this trust, the people who profit and benefit from this trust are protected. So we're not going to find out. And it was interesting. It was called the 1953 Trust, the year of his birth. Why? He didn't find the Lord. He's being reborn. Reborn as a new person with $550 million plus dollars in assets to be spread all over the place. That tells me he had a plan. One of the other very, very important things that's related to the cause of death is the fact that the general damage in the throat was more suited to strangulation than it was to hanging. And as someone who was affiliated with the prison said before, and as is pretty much common knowledge, you don't get bed sheets like you got at home in this jail. They were kind of akin to something like tissue paper, so they could not support any weight. And the issue was the bone in the neck called the hyoid bone was broken. And there was screaming in the cell. And the guards were invisible, disappeared. The cameras all went out. This has all the hallmarks, as Mr. Bush used to say, of some sort of operation that's carried out at the highest levels of the military-industrial complex. Make no mistake about it. And Epstein will be on a private island, or maybe that magic 33,000-acre ranch that he was dreaming about, continuing what he did. And what was he doing? What was his role? Why is he so important? Why is he part of this struggle that isn't flesh and blood? And when I found an article on BuzzFeed, Jeffrey Epstein's links to scientists are even more extensive than we thought. And these are some of the finest schools in the United States, like MIT, Harvard, et cetera, et cetera. But when I looked at the details of some of these, donations and funding projects, it's very clear what he's doing and what he's building. So for a group called Humanity Plus, he's donating money to the World Transhumanist Association, to something called Machine Intelligence Research Institute, the Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence. He's contributing money to the power that is not flesh and blood. And this flesh and blood power controls the world, or non-flesh and blood power controls the world, controls our leaders, and controls virtually everything, to the point that it is so effective, I don't even think we could say with certainty that our leaders are leaders, that they could have been cloned in the past or be the result of artificial intelligence. When I was going into that shooting a long, long time ago in Sweden, I found a Japanese artificial intelligence news robot that was the exact twin of the person who was the news presenter. You couldn't tell them apart. That's back in the days of Anders Breivik, if you remember him. And that's why it's so important to know the history of all these operations, because they build on each other. And most everything is flushed down the memory hole, so we'll never know, hear, see about it in any way, shape, or form. One of the other most disturbing factors is Jeffrey Epstein had a business relationship with the former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak, who was also a former head of Israel's Military Intelligence Directorate. And the disturbing part of this business relationship involved a name of a company called Reporti Homeland Security, changed to Carbine with a Y as opposed to an I, that handled calls and identification capabilities for emergency response services. So basically, I would say they're putting together the communication systems for governments, including the police and the military, and he had his hand in the pie. When he was being considered for indictment in Florida, they dropped the ball. It was hands off because they said he was an intelligence asset of the highest order, and they couldn't prosecute him back then. And the local chief of police down there was apoplectic because he doesn't realize that there's pecking orders way above him. We're at the bottom. He's just one step above the bottom. And then above that, it could probably rise to infinity for what's there. And what's there is the tree of knowledge, the things that aren't flesh and blood, that maybe even go bump in the night. But that's what's there. And that's what controls all our leaders. That's what controls the world. That's what is really the deep state. And they want to kill, ultimately, all carbon life on the planet Earth. So that's why it behooves us to all work together for common cause. Everything's in this. Like we always hear Jeff Renz talking about Fukushima and the catastrophic offense at the break of how they're trying to poison, basically, all living things. This is done by design. Silicon doesn't need the environment we need. It can live in a radioactive environment that would kill us. It could live in an environment with infectious diseases and bacteria and viruses that would kill us. It will survive because basically it's a machine. And ultimately, this is what is being devised for this tree of knowledge, stealing God's Eden and our lives from us. And very few people are willing to talk about it at that level. But that's what we face. So we have to know our enemy. We have to be prepared. And part of the thing about this war is not a war of weapons. It's a war of thought, ideas, words, and that's why fighting against the freedom of speech is so important. And we'll give you some clues in that regard on how to survive in that battlefield better, to prosper, to turn it around, and take us back to the constitutional republic and the Eden we live in. Thanks for coming out. I'm George Freund, your guest host from Canada. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Bye.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rents.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rents.com.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Numana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food storage all over. If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio's Superfood. I've taken Bio's Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Hi, it's Catherine from the Power Hour. If you are one of the many millions of people who have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or having unrestful sleep throughout the night, REM sleep could be the solution you've been searching for. If you are like me and are afraid of the dangerous side effects from prescription sleep aids, REM sleep is an all-natural alternative that contains ingredients research has shown to help improve and enhance better sleep. REM Sleep will get you the deep sleep you need to feel your best and will ensure you wake up feeling energized. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Thepowermall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com today.
Welcome back, Power Hour Nation. I'm your guest host from Canada. Riding shotgun with me today is Jack Mullen from The Government Rag, and I play in The Government Rag, too, a little bit. And he writes a lot of great scholarly articles in there about things. He's very knowledgeable about history and tactics and techniques. And I should get to a couple of little pieces in the news that was sent to me today to keep you in the loop. And, you know, part of it is this Brexit thing in the UK, like, it's almost laughable to me that it's gone on this long. And I look at it as a dog and pony show to basically put fleas in under your armpits to make you scratch a lot until you don't want Brexit anymore. So even though there was a referendum to say we want out, they, you know, the powers that be don't want you to get out. So they've made this, you know, this just incredible process of tedium, to the point where, okay, we'll stay just to shut you up. And that's, I think, what it's all about, really. And, you know, so I don't get too emotional about that. And even if you had a no-deal Brexit, so what? Okay, some people lose some money for a little while. They'll get it back later. It's all going to work out. When they were bombing Britain in the Blitz, I was a whole lot worse. And you persevered, and you didn't have to bury tens of thousands of people from the bombing. And the older people I knew from way back then, like one of my neighbors survived the Blitz. She was a young girl then. And it was just, you just make tea. Either you live or you die, but you have your tea. And, you know, there was nothing that could really rile her up in any way, shape, or form. And we're so panicky emotional today. And it's about stuff that it's really not going to make you in any way, shape, or form have a different life, really, compared to what you have and what's going to be planned for you if Brexit happens or it doesn't happen. It's just people have spoken that they're not into globalization. There was an article in the Toronto Star about that, a little editorial that they failed. It was just a little thing for the faithful to say, you know, this isn't going so good. And, well, it shouldn't, because I look at globalization as taking out all the bulkheads in a ship so you can go faster. Until you hit the iceberg, then you don't go too fast, except down, hard. And compartmentalization is very, very important in dealing with many, many things. And tearing down all the walls and the barriers in almost any system destroys the system. But in that little volcano of greed to the really, really rich people, sounds like fun when you're on your super yacht with your private plane and Epstein's girls following you around. It's a good life. But for the rest of us, it's probably not that great a thing. U.S. in talks to end the Yemeni war. Well, that, I would say, is probably one of the best little snippets we can have, because war is just war against all we the people, for the powers, the invisible powers that be, so that they can profit from these wars. And how we get suckered into them over and over again and condone it is disgusting. Afghan government concerns about peace deal reached between U.S. Taliban negotiators. You have to feel so sorry for Afghanistan that they had the misfortune of having opium all over the country, because that's the fundamental basis for war: gold, oil, and drugs. And they got the drugs. And the Taliban stopped the opium. They put them out of business. And there's supposed to have been a war on drugs somewhere, but unfortunately drugs are a major commodity paid for in U.S. dollars. And I think by limiting the opium supply, they probably put a real noogie on the American dollar and business interests around the world. And that was probably the primary reason they went in there, and the rest was made up. So, most unfortunate for them, indeed. And I look at the modern liberal. I did a jest article once, because I live in the liberal utopia of Canada, that our leftists are the nouveau, because here we're bilingual, so you got to be a bit French, so, you know, you got to stick a French word in there. We're the new nouveau Taliban, because their ideas and opinions, as Jack and I will discuss, are forced upon us whether we like them or not. And if we don't like them, well, they may not skin us alive and dump our bodies on the hot sand or do some other things that were popular in Afghanistan, but we're not going to be at the top of the hit parade, that's for sure. So there's really no difference between the neoliberal idealisms and the Taliban. It's a forced system of beliefs put on you to force you to submit, not to God, but to submit to the power, the money powers, and any other power of despots that can take over outside of any common laws of a constitutional republic and a free and decent constitution designed by sane, rational men at a very important time in history. A document that probably would never, ever see the light of day again in any revolution or any usurpation of a despot state to turn it into some form of civil society. Because, of course, the big thing that's never, ever going to be written down again is the right to bear arms. That you can pretty much count on. Anyway, Jack, welcome aboard. We have some big dragons to slay, I think, in this world today. And, I'm quite blessed to have you at my side in many of these little struggles to help enlighten people and turn the worm around a little bit to give us hope. That's one of the big things about radio, is maybe we all suffer in silence somewhere wondering about all the things going on in the world, but when we all get together on radio like they used to do on the BBC and the war behind enemy lines, it's just nice to hear there's a little breath of freedom, a breath of fresh air that can lead us out of the wilderness, so they say. And that's something you're a master of, in analyzing facts and data, not being taken in by the mass compendium of lies that float around this earth. And for that, we're truly blessed to have you.
Well, thank you. I don't know that I would go as far as you went there, but I certainly appreciate your confidence. And I really enjoy speaking with you, not only on the air, but we communicate almost every day with just the barrage of data that's coming out of this irrational world that is, has never in my lifetime, certainly probably any lifetime, any time, has been so overwhelmingly insane. And so, you know, my point of view today is that 90% of anything that you hear is likely the opposite of what it is intending to make you want to believe. And the other 10% is mixed with half and half. So we have misinformation and disinformation, and that's the only job of those people that provide us with our daily ration of what's supposedly going on and what government's about and who's trying to take care of you and why the weather's bad. And the list goes on and on and on. But nonetheless, as you and I note, it has become, to the point where it's comparable to various revolutions in history. And one of the things that I'm writing right now, I think, is going to be one of the articles I'm most proud of, is an article about revolutions. And namely, what I'm going to say is the four big revolutions of the human experience, say, post 1600s. And these revolutions were created by, I believe, the same people for the same ends, and they have very interesting connections that tie one to the next one to the next one. I think that the final revolution, at least is final in terms of the people who are creating it, believe, is now being fomented and is actually underway with the election of Donald Trump. One of the most disappointing things in my life is the fact that I had some hope that Donald Trump was going to make some difference and change this ship that we're on from going straight towards the iceberg. But unfortunately, it seems to be pouring on the fuel. And so therefore, the only outcome I can see is that this revolution is etched in stone, just like the others were. And you cannot easily, as a small group of people like ourselves, make a dent. You can't even, I have friends that believe, you know, that we went to the moon, and I can't even break their shell to have a look at it. I mean, it's ridiculous in its presentation entirely. It is cartoonish, but I can't get them to even glance that's available to show you precisely why it was impossible and the number of people that died trying to keep the secret that it wasn't going to happen. And anyway, you know that, and I know that, but it is very frustrating to believe that you can't make a dent in this world with the truth, you know. And I think James Fetzer's naivety when he was in the Wisconsin Court of Law attempting to bring absolute barefaced truth that is incontrovertible, and he wasn't even allowed to present it. And that is the world that we're living in now. Truth means nothing whatsoever. I don't remember the exact place in English law, but there is a component of English law, not the United States, that forbids the use of truth if it's going to negatively affect the ruling establishment at that time. Of course, but they were then able to, they had a court called the Star Chamber. The Star Chamber was a place that was supposedly the last resort, kind of like our Supreme Court. And you could go if you were, in some way or another harmed by the court system outside, by the common law courts, or if the governments involved were egregiously violating your rights, you could go to the Star Chamber and maybe you would be, you know, found vindicated. And for most petty things, it worked fairly well. When it became important for people's lives who were going to be basically tortured to death in the most horrible ways, that it's unimaginable even for, you know, Europeans to have used things like flogging people to death or cutting their ears off and then allowing them to stay in prison for a period of time before they had their heads cut off and so forth. But this Star Chamber failed regularly every time it involved bringing charges against the higher up established ruling parties. And so that's the world that we live in now. And the United States was different from that, and acquiring Star Chambers, and you had a procedure that you could follow. We called it rule of law and due process. And you could take your situation to a real court and be heard by learned judges who were impartial. And unfortunately, that's entirely gone now. And you can see that it is not really possible in any human situation to maintain the morality of a government when government itself is just an act of protecting the elite from the people. And no matter how well it's structured with what great intentions, it will de-evolve, especially when it's possible for a group of people to manufacture their own currency and to create wealth out of thin air and then have it established as legal tender and then used all over the world. And then at that point, you've established a monster, megalomaniacs, capable of thinking up anything and then turning it into reality. And now today we see that everywhere we look. We see it with the victims groups that are promoted to now having the highest position in our higher culture. And we see it in the science that's being created to manipulate not only the human body, but, you know, maybe perhaps transhumanism, creating robots out of human beings. And we see it in all forms of the degradation of liberty against human beings, and people becoming now basically herd animals that are allowed to have a certain amount of liberty in order to go home at night and sleep well so they can get back up the next day and believe the lies of the mainstream media and maintain the flow of taxes. And I suppose that that's a dark view of the world, but it's a view that I wish that I could make go away, but I see it strengthening every day, and I do not see large numbers of people in the outside world. Now, I see large number of people on the internet who pay attention to this stuff. They're getting it more clearly, and that's the thing I see. You understand, wait a minute, there is a component here that we were before never willing to bring up, and now we see it clearly. And I'm speaking, of course, of the Zionist communist factions of the Talmudic Orthodox Jewry crowd who have lived for centuries under the weight of the Talmud. And the Talmud is an instrument for creating deceptive tools, including Zionism and communism. And I see a lot of people waking up to that now and understanding that both communism and Zionism are the same thing. They just have different points of view. Communism destroys all government, and Zionism creates a single government. So politically, Zionism is about a new world order, no doubt, whereas communism is the total destruction of what's seeing happening right now in front of our eyes. All the nations of the world are being plundered, infiltrated, their walls taken down, borders gone. Nationalism is now a disgrace. Believing in your own culture and your own race is something now that's demonized. And except for the elite that are actually creating this, which they reinforce the fact that they're racially superior, that they have walls, you have to have specific genetics to enter and to make it a home. And for those who can think, you should be able to see that this is clearly what the people that were once Christians warned about and that were so concerned about. And why we ended up today in a world that's not 2,000 years out of superstitious dark ages, but has in fact never left them. And we are fighting a religious war that has gone on for centuries and still ideas that were spoken 2,000 years ago when men lived in, you know, I don't know, they had dirt floors and some sort of makeshift homes and herded sheep and had no education and believed that thunder was the gods beating on the walls. And anyway, the situation that I said, I will turn it back over to you to ask questions or follow forward. I mean, there's so many things in the news. You're correct talking about the NRA being demonized. To what extent the NRA is actually compromised and controlled opposition, I don't know. I'm a fan of Gun Owners of America. But I believe sincerely that the attempt to take our weapons is contrived. I've written about it extensively. I think the idea that all of a sudden we have one mass shooting after another and all coincidentally involving AR-15s like in Dayton or AR-47s like in Gilroy or I'm sorry, AK-47s or AK-47s like in El Paso and the types of guns that were used in that fake shooting in New Zealand. there can only be statistically one way that that can happen, and that is that they've been contrived. And they are being used to remove those particular type of weapons from the hands of people who could use them competently in defense of themselves, their family, and our nation, as the militia was designed to do. And people like James Madison, necessary for all of us to be armed, and those armed citizens in concert with the militia would be an impenetrable force that could not be attacked both by foreign or domestic enemies, and they specifically included the government. But as you now know, militias are outlawed and are demonized, and the word is not even friendly anymore, and the last step is to remove our weapons, and anyone who can think again must understand that if they remove your weapons, you are absolutely vulnerable to anything that comes along. And for anyone who believes that government will remain moral indefinitely with an unarmed population, all you need to do is just read a little history, and you can see that that's not the case. So I'm most disturbed by this ramping up of the, you know, of the gun grabbers and Trump's support of them, and Trump's support for using political psychiatry as a tool against people to use their weapon or to have a right to weapons. Psychiatry and the entire non-science are both political weapons, and they create political reality, and then authorities wear it around and convince people that the science is not scientism and that they know what they're talking about. And if we look at the history of psychiatry, it's riddled with ridiculous theories, and the same with psychology. And so anyway, when you put these tools in the hands of a well-armed government against a group of people that have nothing more than some shovels and rakes and knives to fight with, everybody's in trouble. And so,
well, by and large there, Jack, as someone who's had a lot of training in a lot of things, you know, your shovels and knives are at the bottom of the list, but, you know, they do exist. But, you know, Comrade Molotov, if we ever want to, you know, look at the great communist leader in World War II, you know, made a cocktail that did a lot of damage to the German armored corps. And, you know, there's a lot of glass bottles around still, and you know, they are. If we're ever faced with an invasion by an enemy, where we're occupied by any type of military force or something like that, that's an option. And one of the favorite I'll always love John Wayne. One of his great movies is The Fighting Seabees. Do look that up, people. Do look that up. The Fighting Seabees is a bunch of men stranded on an island. The Japanese are attacking with everything, and they just have construction equipment and some small arms to fight back with. You'd be amazed what you can do with that construction equipment, because the bottom of the dozer is a tank. And,
right.
You know, that changes the whole dynamic of the battlefield very, very quickly. And I think as a industrialized nation, there's a whole bunch of those things lying around the lower 48 and many other places, not just on a remote island in the Pacific. And, you know, one of my other modifications to that idea would be the forklift. You ever want to go up against one of those puppies? It'll lift up a car. You know, try and stop it. You know what I mean? And you got those little... There's your little forks on the front there to, you know, to post notes on the bulletin board with to say, you know, we'll not surrender to an enemy force trying to destroy the continental United States or anybody else, really, in the event of a catastrophe. And, you know, they can probably hold a lot of weight, too, and be armor-plated into, what, tens of thousands and tens of thousands of little tanks just buzzing around the streets and things like that. So, you know, to think in the traditional thing of small arms is very, very archaic, because even with more advanced firearms, they're still archaic, easily spotted, easily, you know, alerted, prepared for, and things like that. Improvised weapons and tactics have won many, many revolutions, and also, you know, kept foreign invaders at bay when you're faced with, you know, the enemy bursting upon your shores. And the technology and industrialization of the world has put more things at your fingertips. The big thing you need in a fight, I learned a long time ago, is not a gun. It's a brain. And if you got a brain, you're going to come out on top. And if you're only dependent on the gun, well, maybe you're going to lose. And for us, the big battle is the war of words, to understand what's coming and prepare people for it so that they can deal in the war of words. And the war of words is just like a war on the battlefield. And it involves ambush and counter-ambush. So they turn a whole lot of words into something that lure you into an ambush and destroy you, and the only thing you can do is counter-ambush, but because it's been prepared in advance, you're kind of stuck. And you walk into the trap and, you know, you're purposely destroyed there. So to invent new words, new ideas, new concepts, or to see the battle at a much more profound thing, that's why I talked a lot about that we're not fighting against flesh and blood at the beginning, and to talk about the computers, the artificial intelligence, the genetically modified beings and beasts that they make and things like that, those are new words. And those new words don't lead you into a minefield. They give you the counter-ambush ability to destroy your enemy. And that's why you have to embrace them, adopt them, and use them, because they expect you to use your old tools to defeat you. You don't want to walk into that. Anyway, I'm George Freund from Canada, Jack Mullen from the United States. We'll see you on the other side of the break. Thanks for being a Power Hour Nation.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods, Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? ThePowerMall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at ThePowerMall.com today.
Dr. Joe Schneller.
The efficacy that we're looking for, that we're going to prove, is that Carnivora wakes up this immune system and makes it dominant.
I highly recommend that you get started right away using Carnivora, because it really will help you. Just follow the directions as the company gives them to you. And I just want everybody to know that there's been no one paid to do this. I'm doing this on my own because I care about everybody and want to see healthy people.
My husband has recovered tremendously after the physician suggested that he start taking Carnivora. When he was doing so well, I decided to start taking it as well, and we're both so pleased to be able to feel healthy again.
Hello, folks. Richard Ostro of Carnivora Research International here. Visit carnivora.com or call 1-866-VENUS-FLY. That's carnivora.com or 1-866-VENUS-FLY. Call us.